Many of the battles waged in the Indiana General Assembly break down along party lines, Republican versus Democrat. Other issues, however, bring to light nonpartisan divisions, urban versus rural, industrial versus agrarian, young versus old, rich versus poor, and from time to time, Indianapolis versus, well, the rest of the state. What happens, though, when the state encounters a challenge that doesn't play favorites? When demographic distinctions mean nothing and every citizen, regardless of age or affiliation, ancestry or accomplishment, is equally susceptible to a threat? Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this week's show, we'll examine the General Assembly's response to the utterly indiscriminate scourge that is mental illness. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. The diagnosis, treatment, and prevention of mental illness is, as virtually every Hoosier family can attest, a critically important issue. And as such, we have a lot to talk about. I am very pleased to welcome to this table Indiana Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, chair of the Indiana Roundtable on Mental Health, Republican Senator Michael Crider of Greenfield, primary author of the bill I mentioned at the top of the show, Democratic Representative Rita Fleming of Jeffersonville, and Stephen McCaffrey, president and CEO of Mental Health America of Indiana. Thank you all for being here for this important discussion. Lieutenant Governor Crouch, let me start with you. This is an issue that you have championed for some time. You were involved in creating the roundtable a few years back. You've been very vocal in testifying, something of an unusual step for Lieutenant Governor in the legislature. Why the passion for the issue of mental health?
Well, the human cost of this pandemic's huge, and it's going to continue to grow for years to come. One out of five Hoosiers struggles with mental illness or addiction. And we all know Hoosiers that have faced those challenges, sometimes our own family members. And for me, it's very personal. My mother struggled with depression. We buried my brother Larry in November. He was an alcoholic. And my sister Nancy died by suicide in her early 20s. My husband's father was an alcoholic. And our daughter Courtney is 15 years sober and bipolar. So when you have lived with people that have met those challenges and have struggled through no fault of their own, they've inherited genes that predispose them to these conditions, you know that there's things that you can do and you have to speak out. One of my family members said they got all the bad genes in the family. And I said, it's not the hand you're dealt, it's how you play it. But we have a responsibility to give people good cards to play. And I think that's what Senate Bill 1's all about.
Well, and certainly positions you to address this issue with firsthand knowledge about the impact it can have on any family, regardless of status, income, or any other factor. Senator Crider, same question, I guess. I think you lost a friend to suicide.
Yes.
But this is, again, an issue that you have championed. And it's an issue you mentioned during earlier in the session that this is kind of the one thing, I'm paraphrasing, the one issue that literally affects everybody. Yes. Is that how you see this?
I think what the Lieutenant Governor just said and trying to break down the stigma is so important, because it literally, mental illness and addiction does not care what your socioeconomic status is, what your educational attainment is. It literally affects more of my constituents than I think any other single issue. And so every session I try to meet with the professionals like Steve and others to try to determine what I can do as a legislator to try to be helpful. And I was still stinging from the loss of a good friend to suicide in 2019. That fall we met and they said, you want to try something big? And I said, yes, let's do it. And so we created the Behavioral Health Commission. And Senate Bill 1 really is the outpouring of that work that was done. Terrific work. I'm really proud of this.
It's about 2 years, essentially, of
about
work.
About 2 years of study.
The panel included the gentleman sitting next to you.
Right. And they engaged academic partners through IU and began to quantify the cost of untreated mental illness in the state. It's huge. $4.2 billion, and so it affects so much. It affects our business side. It affects education system. It certainly affects the the law enforcement and the judiciary that I'm familiar with.
Your background.
Yeah, and so this is a topic that I've focused on, and I'm really pleased to be able to put forth Senate Bill 1. I think it's going to move us really forward.
Well, the numbers you alluded to that the commission came up with and the folks from Fairbanks came up with did have caught a lot of attention, certainly, when Lieutenant Governor mentioned 1 in 5, I think it's actually 22%, so even a little bit higher than that. And you look at for every 4 individuals that have received treatment, as I understand it, there's another one who hasn't. I mean, these numbers. So let me ask you, Representative Fleming, you are not only a member of the General Assembly, but you are a licensed physician, an obstetrician, gynecologist, delivered, as I, if your bio was correct, 7,000 babies.
Quit counting then, over
7,000. Quit counting. So by these numbers, more than 1,500 of those babies essentially were destined to fall victim to mental illness. Does that strike you as odd, or do these numbers seem inflated to you, or is there an undercount? What was your professional experience?
It doesn't strike me as odd at all. And if you look before, the babies were the mothers, and the as we're all aware, maternal deaths in this state are at appallingly high rate. And we've addressed the physical causes, the hypertension, the hemorrhage, but what continues to increase are drug overdoses, suicide, and homicide among pregnant and postpartum women. In fact, in the state of Indiana, if you are pregnant or recently delivered, you're more likely to die of those three causes than if you're not pregnant at all. That's terrible. We're losing mothers. Mm-hmm. Children are losing their mothers. Sometimes the babies don't survive the pregnancy. Now, there are some success stories. We've extended postpartum Medicaid coverage to 1 year so that the woman who perhaps has been able to get treatment is able to continue that through 1 year. You can't just drop her at 1 month or so and say, we can't fund your medication any longer. But we must do something to protect these mothers and babies.
Well, you know, Stephen McCaffrey, you've been at this for a while, I think 30-some years, and we're all watching the evolution of mental health and the way that the General Assembly has addressed it. And the numbers, again, your organization has some pretty compelling numbers of its own. I think the suicide rate in Indiana has climbed every year for 50 years, I believe.
We had a 10% increase last year.
10% increase last year, and we are above the national average. Mm-hmm. We're not often above the national average, but on this, we would just assume not be, but we are. You've watched it up close. What is changing? Is there less stigma? Is there now an acceptance that this issue touches everybody? How have you seen the issue evolve in the political arena in this state?
It really has changed. You know, when I first took this job, I would talk about mental health and substance use issues, and it was pretty much, that's bad behavior. People need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. And because it's an invisible disorder, we don't really have a poster child for mental health, right? Which has made it very difficult.
Although that's changing. I mean, you see a lot of the Colts came forward with Lose the Stigma campaign or whatever.
My early years at the State House, I had to carry around a brain scan that showed somebody with schizophrenia and somebody that was normal, just so legislators could understand that this really is a physical medical illness. And that was the first message, that it's a medical illness. And I think that is getting through. I think, frankly, the opioid epidemic had made a big difference. I think COVID, you know, I know a lot of people think COVID created the mental health crisis. It didn't create it, but it made people more aware of it. And so we have a lot of things that are coming all together. And thanks to everybody here at this table. There's never been, I don't think you said, Senator Crider, there's never been a Senate Bill 1 that's focused on mental health before in the history of the state of Indiana.
Which, for those who don't follow this, that means that the caucus, the controlling caucus in this case, Republicans who have a supermajority, have deemed it so important that they have bestowed upon it the top number one ranking.
Yep.
And I do want to talk about that because certainly that's been making headlines. One other question, though, that following up on what Stephen McCaffrey said about this notion that maybe Hoosiers, you know, being common sense, tough, you know, a lot, at least that's how we sort of fancy ourselves. What about this notion? And I've had relatives, you know, older relatives that when people were dealing with depression and so forth, they would say precisely that. Oh, you just got to suck it up, pull up. You know, this is, be optimistic, write down something. I mean, do you still see pockets of that in your Republican, in your party, or in other parts of the state, or have we gotten past that?
You know, I think there's some of that is out there, but not to the extent that it used to be. You know, to Steve's point, you know, there were bad things that came from COVID. There were some good things. One of the bad things is we all faced a mental health crisis. It might have been depression or isolation or uncertainty or fear. The good news is we all face that, and so there's more of an understanding that, yes, we can all go through this, and then a more of a sense of urgency to do something, hence Senate Bill 1. So COVID kind of elevated the awareness because we all experienced one something.
So unlike, for instance, public health, where I've teased your partner in crime, the governor, that he's a victim of long-haul COVID because of what some members of your party perceived as overreach in terms of emergency orders and so forth, he still has had some challenges with the enactment, for instance, and funding of public health measures more broadly. But you see this as distinct. This doesn't have the same baggage, perhaps.
I think that has more to do with local versus state control. This is everybody is all in.
And especially kids. I mean, I've seen some of the public health data that suggests that as bad as COVID was for everybody, young people who already, I guess, are dealing with the things that, if memory serves, if I can think back that far, we all dealt with in sort of those formative years, we don't even know perhaps the scope of the enormity of the problem. And we won't know for years, maybe.
A recent study said 1 out of 7 high school boys has contemplated suicide over the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. 1 out of 4 high school girls has contemplated suicide over the last 6 months. So, you know, we have to be concerned about that because that's the future of Indiana.
Very alarming numbers. All right, you had your sort of fanfare in the introduction, setting the stage for Senate Bill 1. Now tell us what is in Senate Bill 1. I know there are several components, but give us the brief summary of what you want to accomplish with this.
Well, I think the core of it is we're really looking at ways we can improve the delivery of services to folks in crisis. And so it begins to look at moving Indiana more towards the CCBHC, the Certified Community Behavioral Health Model. And in order to be a certified community behavioral health center, you have to demonstrate that you have the ability to accept folks 24/7, to do things like mobile crisis response.
Which is why Indiana only has, 19 now,
right.
I guess, for 92 counties.
To be sophisticated enough that you can do things like manage medicine if somebody's on medicine to help them manage their addiction. And so, but really the game changer, I think, is the mobile crisis response. The pilot projects that we've done in the state have demonstrated that we can divert people away from the emergency room at about 60%. You can actually resolve that incident on the scene, that you can, for certain, if they don't end up in the ER, they're not likely to end up in the county jails where nobody with mental illness needs to end up. And so we really are hopeful. Indiana's not alone in this discussion. We've seen very promising results from other states that have kind of been ahead of us in this discussion. So it marries up the 988 crisis hotline,
which was the federal
federal
initiated
line.
Last year.
I worked on that bill last year.
And that's when you talk about the mobile response units, they would be tied to the hotline.
They're tied to
it. So you're calling
and
you get somebody who responds theoretically, and then you have a safe place to go.
Yeah. And so it's a very simple formula. It's someone to call, someone to respond, and a safe place to go to receive follow-up care. And really that follow-up care is another critical aspect of this whole discussion. We've learned over the years that as folks maybe have been in incarceration, they're transferring out into the community. If we provide them with some services and help them make that transition, the recidivism rate will drop and we will see more success. And so we've learned some hard lessons over the years, but really Senate Bill 1 begins to encapsulate that and give us really an opportunity, I think, to make a big difference for the state.
And in terms of the behavioral health clinics you mentioned, again, we have 19, but what this would do, if enacted, would require the Family and Social Services Administration to seek federal funding to build that out.
Yeah, and it begins to actually change the way we pay for some of those services through Medicaid And so there would be downstream what's called a state plan amendment to look at that also.
Rita Fleming, again, you're from the medical end of things, from the legislative end of things. Are there certain elements of the bill that you see as particularly important? We're going to talk about the price tag attached. I guess the federal government's fronting it. That's maybe somebody else's issue. But, I mean, do you see this as certain elements of this as being more important than others, or is it just the notion of a comprehensive approach to the challenge?
Well, I think the fact that you mentioned the comprehensiveness of the approach, that you're not just using, it's not just a medication approach, it's not just a group therapy approach, it's complete wraparound services. If I could just briefly talk about how that can be very successful. My mother also was a paranoid schizophrenic, and we were so ashamed of that as children because she'd have to go in and out of the hospital. So I was the oldest of 9 siblings. But throughout her life, we were able to find a very good physician, group therapy, appropriate medications, because it used to be the Haldol and the Thorazine and medications with terrible side effects. But the newer medications that focused exactly on what you said on the brain changes allowed her to live a pretty normal life to the age of 88. That's very unusual in a person with a diagnosis like that. So it wasn't just one mode of therapy. It was all of these together.
And would not have had that quality of life, perhaps, you're suggesting, without the various expertise being brought to
exactly.
bear.
Exactly, right.
Stephen McCaffrey, as you look at this, again, you've got this 30-plus year front row seat. Are there certain elements of SB1 that you're going to go to the mat for? Or again, is it this notion of it's, I know you said it's the most comprehensive and the most significant you've seen in your career. But.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if people realize, like, we are lucky in Indiana to have a great community mental health center public system. But that was a system that was created, a bill that was signed by John Kennedy when he was president. So we have a system that is old. And this CCBHC model is evidence-based practice, comprehensive integrated care, in a way that we currently do not do that. We know how to deal with these issues, we just never have. And the CCBHC model is the way to do it. And it is tied closely to the 988. The mobile crisis teams are included in both, so they are connected. And I would just say, in terms of what's important, when we started the commission, we started looking at a bunch of different topical issues. And what we realized was that we couldn't address any of them because we didn't have an infrastructure or a foundation of mental health services in the state of Indiana, and that we had to start there first. So no different than roads or highways or anything else, you have to have that foundation, that infrastructure, and then you can look at some of these other issues. So there are 3 parts to the bill, the CCBHC, 988, and the continuation of the commission for another 2 years, where we hope we can look at the issues that we thought we were going to be looking at the first 2 years, building upon the 988 and the CCBHC.
And it continues it with just some additions, or some legislative appointments to flesh it out. We should point out that Indiana's public health system is more than 100, was structured 100 years ago. So this Kennedy administration thing, Johnny come lately, to the whole issue, I suppose. Let's get down to money, because there's a lot of dollars in addition to the statistics that we talk about, untreated care, essentially is a $4.2 billion wallop to the state when you look at direct care, indirect care, lost productivity, et cetera. And the commission had suggested, I think, $130 million is what was needed. Looks like it at this point, and I know all bets are off until the new revenue forecast is updated, comes out later in the session and so forth, but we're looking at $30 million, which may sound like a lot, but in the scheme of state budget, I mean, proposed raises for state troopers. I know you're a law enforcement guy. I'm not saying that's a bad idea, but that's $36 million. So that's $6 million more than this proposed increase that some lawmakers think is sufficient. A, is $30 million sufficient? And B, if it not, what are you and your, again, I'll refer to your partner, Eric Holcomb, willing to do to ensure that gets closer to the $130 million?
Well, we know Indiana's economic condition is very, very sound. And we also know that revenues are coming in every month way over projections. So it is anticipated that revenue forecast that comes in April is going to be way over what we are working with right now.
You want to see $130 million.
Absolutely.
And does anybody think that that's unrealistic? I mean,
no, it
I'd
has
like
to be
see
that.
More.
And just to give you an idea, $30 million would cover the call centers. So when we say a place to call, someone to come, and a safe place to go, you know, $30 million would pay a third of that. That's not going to do it.
Do you think that's doable? I mean, given the budget surplus and so forth, I doubt there's going to be much opposition from your caucus.
There won't be.
We should point out there hasn't been much opposition at all. It came out of committee. Your bill came out of committee without a single nay vote and out of the Senate without a single nay vote.
And I certainly applaud all of the work of the commission. You did a terrific job. But you show this is necessary. We need this much money. And some of the testimony was compelling in what a relatively small amount of money did to work, and we could expand that so much more, like the competency restoration services were very successful. So if we were able to take that and broaden that with this amount of money, I think it could be very impactful.
Senator, do you care where the, I presume you want the $130 million, do you care where it comes from? And the reason I say that, we have the budget surplus and just the general funds, which will be allotted. Then you have suggestions about a surcharge on phones, which is how we do 911 calls, pay for that now. And then the chamber and a coalition of health organizations has trotted out something that it's been fond of for some time, which is a $2, in this case, the proposal is $2 per pack cigarette tax, to a portion of which would go to this. Do you care which of those?
No, I honestly do not care. And
you're comfortable even with a tax
and
increase?
So I think I would take the cigarette tax in a minute. It has all kinds of downstream benefits for other health issues. The cell phone fee really is very appealing. It generates about $91 million of that $130 million kind of automatically. We've used that system for the last many years to fund our 911 centers, and it's a very predictable, dependable stream of money, and it doesn't decrease like the cigarette tax does. And so,
which by definition, if it's successful.
If it's successful, you actually hope it decreases. And so, you know, I my middle school grandchildren have cell phones. That's going to be an increasing pool of money over time. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's what I really hope to achieve with this, is certainty. So the folks that are in the delivery system, the CCBHCs and the crisis response folks, they can staff up. They can have some certainty that the money is going to be there downstream.
And Lieutenant Governor, do you and the administration care which of these funding sources? Do you have a preference?
Well, it would be important to have a sustainable funding source, because if we fund it out of just our general fund appropriations, then in 2 years we have to come back and look at funding it again. And if the state would ever go into a downturn, we could end up going backwards.
And presumably this problem, although we would like to think that if this were enacted and fully funded, it would solve the problem, chances are, if that trajectory you described, Stephen McCaffrey, is true, we'll still be wrestling with these problems, perhaps in requiring additional services. We talked about Senate Bill 1 for the most part, but another bill, somewhat companion bill, that also has passed, as far as I know, without any negative vote thus far, is House Bill 1006, which deals with the justice system and the incarcerated, because I've seen anywhere from, 25 to 40. I think the Chief Justice of the Indiana Supreme Court suggested 80% maybe of those individuals who are incarcerated in our prisons might have mental health issues. Is that what is the significance of that bill, do you think?
We're very much involved in that as well. And yes, the number is 80% if you include people with mental illness and people with substance use disorders. And what 1006, the original 1006 back in 2015, 16 maybe.
When it wasn't 1006, but it probably had a different...
No,
it was
1006. All right.
So Greg Stirwald, who's done a great job in this, he keeps getting it to be 1006 so we can either get confused or keep track of it.
Well, thank you for not confusing. But basically, it steers people ideally toward...
It does.
Care as opposed to incarceration.
That's right. We have an issue with pretrial where people are sitting in jail, people with mental health and substance use issues, and they could be served better if they receive treatment. And that's what Tenet 6 would do.
Except, where are they going to go? Yeah. Where are you going to take them?
And we hope that's part of what happens with Senate Bill 1 also. We have more wraparound services.
Rita Fleming, 10 seconds, final thought. Doctor gets the final word.
It's an absolute necessity for the progress that Indiana wants to make in terms of health, employment. Every aspect of this state is affected by this, so we certainly hope that this momentum moves forward.
Very good. Well, I appreciate your input on this issue. Again, my guests have been Indiana Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch, Republican Senator Michael Crider of Greenfield, Democratic Representative Rita Fleming of Jeffersonville, and Stephen McCaffrey, President and CEO of Mental Health America of Indiana. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers commentator Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. Well, Ed, it seems that based on the votes and based on the conversation today, everybody seems to think this is a good idea. Why is it only now happening?
Another good idea whose time has come and may have come 3-4 years ago. Yeah, there was a lot of Republican infighting on this, particularly in the Senate. You look to a guy in particular, Senator Mike Young from Indianapolis, who had some real reservations about some of the initial legislation, which really focused a lot more on schools. And he was concerned about parental rights and concerned about some of the surveys that were going on.
And surveys and screenings could take place without a parent's knowledge or permission, right?
Right. And we're seeing some of that reemerge now at the local level again. Hamilton Southeastern Schools in the last week, for example, just pulled back a survey that they said, parents said, and some of the new school board members said, concentrated too much on the social emotional learning aspect and asked too many questions related to student mental health. They didn't feel that that was appropriate. So, you know, a six-figure survey just went by the wayside there.
And even though this bill, SB 1, and for that matter, HB 1006, we also talked about, neither one has anything to do with that. Is there enough baggage surrounding the issue to in any way derail it?
Yeah, I think this one's greased this year. You know, the fact that it's SB 1, panel talked about that, you know, makes it, you know, a top caucus priority and doesn't seem like we've got any of those objectionable matters in there. The money's available and it looks like, again, this is an idea whose time has finally come.
And does it get the fall funding, $130 million?
I think we're looking at something very, very close to that, if not that. But, you know, you saw this week the Indiana Youth Institute released its survey showing the high suicide thought rates, the ideation rates among teens, and I think that really caught the attention of lawmakers.
And will we see more, I mean, given that this is Greece, will we see more of the rallies? We saw the faith community has been showing up in large numbers, others, the lobbying effort, or is that going to carry through until that bill is signed, that budget is signed?
I think you're only going to see the positive end of this. I don't think you're really going to see groups working against this like they had before.
Very good, Ed. Thank you, as always, for your insight. See you next week. Hoosiers say health care costs are out of control, and lawmakers agree. What, though, is their prescription for relief? On the next Indiana Lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. On behalf of commentator Ed Feigenbaum, WFYI Public Media, and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.